and the church here as well for the invitation to be with you this week. I have enjoyed it. I believe, as I indicated Sunday morning, my contact with the Knollwood Church had been limited to just attending meetings when I lived both in Connersville and Richmond, Indiana, and knowing a few people from here over the years, but never had the opportunity to spend this much time here and to get to know more of you than I did before. And I appreciate that. Again, I want to say that I appreciate the fellowship that we have in the gospel on an ongoing basis with the monthly support that you send me. We do appreciate it. From time to time, the living out of the mailbox gets a little, makes you a little nervous, I might say, and so it's good to know that there are brethren who can be counted on, and the check is always there. I appreciate that, and I'm happy to, on that basis, also get better acquainted with you and invite you to come over sometime and visit with us if you're in the neighborhood of West Lafayette, Indiana. I must also thank all of you that either had me in your home or took me someplace and fed me this week. You did a real good job. Probably did a better job than you needed to do, but that wasn't your fault. All you did was put it out there. I don't remember anybody forcing me to eat anything or to take a second helping here or there, but I do appreciate the hospitality that you have shown to me. And then I must sort of conclude these kind of remarks by making a few comments about being with Keith and Reed and Leslie. I've enjoyed that. Everything seems to function fairly well over there. Leslie would get up a little earlier than I did generally, and, well, you know how girls are. They spend a little time in the bathroom, but that all kind of coordinated fairly well, and as soon as she was out, I was able to get in there. So I just had an enjoyable time, and as Keith indicated, we've known of each other and would know each other's name for a few years, but never had a chance till this week to spend much time together, and I have enjoyed it as well. I'm finding fewer and fewer men who are willing to stake their convictions on almost anything. And to quote the famous, well-known gospel preacher, J.D. Tant, brethren, we're drifting. And it's really encouraging to me to once in a while come across somebody who's not going to drift, who's going to try to act as an anchor in the midst of all the other people that are drifting. And so I appreciate him a great deal. Well, let's move on now into the lesson. That's what we've all come here for tonight, but I didn't want to begin without saying those things. Tonight's lesson is entitled The Benefits of Hell. Now, that sounds like a strange title, I know, and obviously you will understand, I hope, that I am not in any sense of the word trying to encourage anyone to go there. But maybe by approaching it from this direction, I can try to encourage you, if you are at the present time headed in that direction, to change course, to be able to determine within yourself that after all, you don't want to go there. Now, I know that there's not a lot of preaching done on the subject of hell. I doubt very much if I preach on it enough. You know, that's kind of old-fashioned preaching. Hell, fire, and brimstone preaching is from an era in the past, or so they would have us believe, and that because we are more sophisticated, and that we don't need to hear that anymore. And so there's not much being said about it. It's amazing as you talk to people on that subject, or even you're just talking to them about their soul, and some of them indicate, as we'll perhaps get to later on, that they don't have time for the Lord, or they're tired of the hypocrites that are in the church, and they're just not going to spend any time with hypocrites. Why should they get up on Sunday morning, get ready, and drive to a location only to be in the presence of hypocrites for the next couple of hours? And somewhere along the way, I gently try to remind them, if they don't determine to change their mind about that, they're going to be real close to hypocrites for a long, long time, because hell is something that lasts eternally, and all hypocrites will be there. And truth matter is, someone that reasons that way is themselves a hypocrite, where they claim to know what they need to be doing and they won't do it. They're not any better than those people they don't want to be around. Well, what are some of the benefits in hell? First one is there will be no more preaching in hell. No more preaching. For those who are dead set on going to hell and who get tired of long, boring sermons, or even short ones for that matter, don't worry. You won't hear any sermons in hell. These sort of people seem to think that preachers are always picking on them. That when they decide, for whatever reason, to come to services sometime, that the preacher sees that they are there and preaches right at them and ignores everybody else that's in there. Generally, that comes from the fact they have a guilty conscience. And it just seems like the preacher's talking to them. But you know, gospel preachers do have a way of making some people feel uneasy. And those who are living in sin are supposed to feel uneasy about what they're doing. And so, as the old saying goes, the work of the preacher is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And that's pretty good. That pretty well summarizes some of the work of the preacher. And so this person thinks, well, the preacher's picking on me. And I'll sure be glad that I don't have to hear that anymore. Well, if you end up going to hell, you won't have to hear any sermons. Short ones, long ones, boring ones, interesting ones, you won't have to hear any of them. And so many people out there in the world who would think of themselves as being a pretty good person will be able someday to reap that benefit. They'll not have to hear any more sermons. You know, most of the time, these people only want to see a preacher for a wedding or a funeral anyway. That's the only time they think you need a preacher. If you got somebody getting married, you've got to have a preacher do that. And if someone dies, you have to have a preacher to come in and preach the funeral. But other than that, they don't want to hear from a preacher. They don't want to be talked to by a preacher. In their mind, talked down to by a preacher. And so in hell, you won't have to worry about that. They don't want to hear what Paul had to say in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. Starting in verse 6, he says, it's only just for God to repay with affliction those who afflict you and to give relief to you who are afflicted and to us as well, when the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, dealing out retribution. King James says, taking vengeance on those who do not know God and to those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. And these will pay the penalty of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and the glory of his power. Friend, if you're not on your way to heaven, then you're on your way to hell. And hell is going to last throughout eternity. It is said to be here eternal destruction. That's not the loss of being. You do not cease to exist. It is a loss of well-being. You will be conscious throughout that whole period of time, and it never ends. Well, if that sounds depressing to you, it should. But one thing you can take heart in, there won't be any preachers there trying to talk to you about your soul and trying to get you to do what is right, because it will be too late. Now, I didn't say there wouldn't be any preachers there. There won't be any. There'll be some preachers there. But there won't be any of them there trying to preach the gospel. But you know, if we're not supposed to be talking about these things, then why did Paul say to Timothy, as we studied on Sunday morning, preach the word, be ready or instant in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. If we're not to talk about these matters and warn people of the danger of losing their soul in hell, then how are we going to reprove and rebuke? Now, exhorting is all right. That's a little bit more positive. Trying to exhort, trying to encourage people to do better in their life. There's a lot of preachers willing to do that. But what about the reproving and the rebuking? Well, they leave that to somebody else. If gospel preachers cannot reprove and rebuke, then how will we ever know what the truth is, knowing that Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free? John 8 and verse 32. You know, the truth of it is, there are a lot of people just don't want the truth. They're satisfied to believe whatever it is they already believe. They don't want the truth. They don't want any preacher trying to talk to them about the truth. Now, there'll be, as I said, there'll be some preachers in hell. There'll be preachers in hell who spent their whole lifetime, maybe in their mind, doing what they thought was the right thing. But they spent their lifetime of preaching, talking to people along the lines of, you can be saved by faith only. Or you can be like Robert Schuller in Garden Grove, California, who doesn't even talk about sin anymore. He'll have a long time to think about the mistakes he made and the direction he chose in preaching. It will last eternally. Friends, that's a long time. I can't even comprehend eternity. It just can't. Beyond the ability of most of us to even get a handle on that. It just goes on and on and on and on. Hell will have some preachers there, but they won't be preaching the gospel. Wouldn't be a need to. People who live in hell will be rid of faithful preachers forever. That's a benefit, isn't it? If that's where you want to go. In hell, there will be no more workers in the church. These are the folks who bother other people with phone calls, letters and cards, and visits. These are the people who notice who's not here in the assembly on the first day of the week or Wednesday night Bible study or during a meeting. And they are concerned enough to call you and find out, are you sick? Were you in some other way unable to be with us? And some folks don't like that. They see that as meddling. Now, there's always been people like this in the church who were really on fire, who had zeal for God, and they loved the Lord and they loved the church, and they just couldn't do enough for the Lord, and they're the ones that call you when you're not here. They're like those in Acts 8 and verse 4, who in the face of persecution didn't run and hide somewhere, but it says, and they were scattered abroad, and they went everywhere preaching the word. There's always been solid, dedicated Christians who just couldn't do enough for the Lord, and they are the ones that bother these people who frequently miss services. These Christians in the first century, why, they even went from house to house, as Paul said he did in Acts 20, verse 20, teaching and talking to people about the Bible, trying to edify one another in the faith, build each other up. They said what was needed. You know, remember Paul said to the Ephesian elders that he had kept back nothing that was profitable unto them. In the 20th chapter of Acts, I already made reference to verse 20. But later on in that chapter, the Apostle Paul said that he'd been there among them for a period of time. He was soon to leave them, but he could say in verse 26, I can testify to you that I am innocent of the blood of all men. That's the kind of people I'm talking about, who go to those members of the church who are weak and wayward and stubborn and seek to get them to turn their life around. Oh, they're a nuisance. You can almost know when you miss a service or two, maybe three especially, there'll be a knock on the door, and it's going to be one of these people. Well, you can be comforted by the fact if you end up in hell, they're not going to knock on your door anymore. Oh, you see, there's some benefit to being in hell, isn't there? You don't ever have to worry about uninvited Christians coming to your home. Have you ever been mistreated because you dropped by to visit a fellow saint uninvited? I have. Now you say, well, Larry, that is kind of rude. You know, you need to call ahead and make an appointment. You know what I find out when you do that? They aren't there. So I just said, well, you know, I've tried to use some good judgment. I won't knock on their door at midnight. But I figure anywhere, you know, from after supper till, and supper, that's an evening meal now. That's, for those of us who grew up in the South, that's supper. You know, you got breakfast, dinner, and supper. I figure any time from supper on till, you know, 8:30 or 9 o'clock, most people are up, and if they're not, they could be one night. Oh, yeah, I've been told, you know, I don't appreciate you coming by unannounced. Oh, that wasn't the problem. The problem was the fellow was wanting to do a few things he didn't want us to find out about. Well, you see, if he doesn't change the course he's pursuing, he won't have to worry about anybody bothering him in hell. He won't have to worry about anybody being concerned about his soul. Not anymore. That time is over. Because Christians are not going to be in hell. Faithful Christians aren't. They've gone on to be with their Savior. They too are existing in eternity, but not in torment. They are existing in a place. Again, it's beyond our description. I can't even fathom what heaven's going to be like. Faithful Christians, the ones who spend their time doing that in this life, they won't be concerned about trying to pump up the weak members of the church anymore. That time is over, because there'll be no time for repentance anyway. There'll be no interruption to the daily routine of these people who are in hell, interrupted because of some meddling member of the church. Why don't they just let me miss services? Why do they care about me? Well, they wouldn't be much of a Christian if they didn't care about you. But, that's a benefit of hell. You won't have to worry about these folks coming by and bothering you anymore. They won't come by. They just won't. That's a benefit. I mean, if that's what you want, that's a benefit, isn't it? Sort of related to that, in hell, there will be no interference with your lifestyle. And that's really what the problem is, as I stated with reference to this illustration in this last point. The fellow that didn't like it when I showed up to talk to him, he had a few things going on in his life he didn't want us to know about. And, people that stop by unannounced catch you off guard. You don't have time to hide everything. I remember Brother Bill Cavender telling a story one time of going over to somebody's house to eat a meal during a gospel meeting, and they said, well, have a seat there on the couch. Supper's almost ready. So he sat down and began to try to busy himself, maybe talking to them a little bit and kind of fidgeting around, and put his hand down under the cushion in the couch, felt a magazine down there, and thought, well, I'll just read that to pass the time. He pulled it out, and I think it was a Playboy magazine. Yeah. You see, when you drop by unannounced, people don't have time to get rid of stuff like that. They don't think to put it someplace where nobody can see it. This fellow I went to see, unannounced, he didn't have time to get rid of his chewing tobacco. He left his bag of Red Man laying over there on the table. Oh, I know why he got mad, because I came by, but it wasn't the time of the evening. It was what he had laying on the table. Now, he didn't ever admit to having that there. But I know what the trouble was, and so does he, and more importantly than that, God does. Well, you see, that was part of the lifestyle he wanted to have, and we were interfering with that. Well, that's one of the benefits of hell. You can just live any way you want, you see, and nobody's going to come along and tell you anymore about your lifestyle. These meddling Christians did that when you were on the earth, and you got tired of that. You wanted to be able to live as the rest of the world. You wanted to fit in with the crowd. And you got tired of people quoting 1 Corinthians 15:33 and warning you about evil companionship and how that you can be corrupted if you spend too much time around the wrong people. You got tired of that because you knew they were telling you the truth. And they made you feel a little bit guilty. And so, they're interfering with what you want to do. Another time in a church where I was working, we had a young man. His dad was a gospel preacher. He'd become unfaithful. He had decided that he and this woman could share an apartment, share the expenses. And there wouldn't be anything going on that would be out of the way, wouldn't be right. This preacher knew me, and I knew him pretty well. He said, I want you to go talk to my son. He said, I want you to deal with him just like he was your own son. He said, don't spare anything. So I did, and I knew the boy too. I'm happy to say he's a faithful Christian now, but he had a lifestyle there that he thought that somehow or other he could justify. And he really didn't appreciate somebody coming by and talking to him about that too much. Well, he already knew it was wrong anyway. You see, when you're in hell, you've tried real hard during your life to fit in with everybody, and guess what? When you're in hell, you will. You'll all be in the same boat. You'll be lost for eternity. Every one of the people that are there, they'll all be alike. They'll all be suffering. They'll be agonizing day after day after day. And it just goes on forever, but you'll all be the same. That's what you wanted, isn't it? Isn't that what people say they want? I have to fit in. I don't want to appear to be different. Well, friend, you won't be any different. When you end up in hell, you're all going to be in the same boat, lost for eternity. There won't be any more calls to righteousness by these holier-than-thou preachers. None of that. Who warns you about all these things, you'll be in hell, and so will everybody else. Nobody coming by to rebuke you. Galatians 6 and verse 1, there are actually Christians who take that to heart. And they see brethren who are overtaken in a fault. And Paul said that when we find someone, when there is a brother or sister of ours that is overtaken in a fault, he said, ye that are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Our obligation is to go to people whose lifestyle is not in agreement with the Word of God and talk to them about their soul. Now, they don't like it. You may even get told to leave, not come back. But friend, I'm telling you, if you're on the receiving end of hopefully what was the loving concern of another Christian, I hope you appreciated that, and I hope you appreciated how hard it was for that Christian to go and do that. I've often wondered if in the minds of some Christians that they think that once a fellow determines to preach the gospel, that he somehow gets infused with an ability to go talk to people about their soul and it not bother them to have to do that. But I'm here to tell you, that never gets any easier. Preachers don't find it any easier to go and talk to people about their soul than you do. The only difference maybe between preachers and some other Christians, they just know that's their duty. Not only as a preacher, in fact, it's a duty as a Christian to try to go to one another and help each other in these kind of times. But it's not easy to go and look somebody in the eye and say, look, what you're doing is wrong. The people you're running around with are dragging you down. You need to quit running around with them. You can't keep going to these places. You've got to quit doing that. Your language or whatever the problem is, you've got to change your language. That's not easy to tell somebody. No one takes pleasure in doing that, but I don't know. I've sort of had the feeling that sometimes people think, well, that's not hard for a preacher. Let him do it. It's easy for a preacher to do that. No, it's not either. It's not easy for this preacher. No, it's not easy. Well, if you end up being in hell, one of the benefits then you're going to have is nobody's going to talk to you about your lifestyle anymore. Regardless of what lifestyle you've decided to pursue, it won't be there anymore. You see, you'll be separated from everything and everybody that's good. Throughout your life, you wanted to be able to do your own thing. You have an eternity and just do your own thing. Nobody's going to be talking to you about it anymore. Now, nobody's going to really be enjoying where they are. But after all, they wanted people to leave them alone. Well, in hell, you'll be left alone. Another thing about it, in hell, there will be no more invitations. No more asking of people to think seriously about their soul's condition. You know, that's embarrassing, some people think. You're in the assembly, and it comes time, the preacher finally quits preaching, and everybody stands up and sings, and somebody whose life is not what it should be, either because they're not a Christian or they are an unfaithful Christian, they just feel uneasy. Sometimes their conscience makes them feel uneasy. You can almost see them holding onto the pew until their knuckles are white, because they know they should be walking down the aisle and they don't do it. Well, they're uncomfortable about that. Well, you won't have to worry about that in hell. Won't be any more invitations for you to have to spurn. Won't be any more. There won't be any more of your family members or your friends who love your soul, who are concerned about you, who keep inviting you to come to services, keep encouraging you to do what's right, and keep hoping with every ounce of their being that at the singing of that invitation song, you're going to go forward and turn your life over to God. Won't be any more of that. See, you'll be separated from them. They're not going to be there. Their faithfulness has been such that God has rewarded them with a place in heaven, so there won't be anybody there to embarrass you during any more invitations. And I wonder, will you even miss the singing of the congregation as they lift their voices in praise to God and in an effort generally at that time of the service to encourage people to think about their soul? The most valuable possession we have is our soul. We might be there to encourage you to think about it anymore. You won't be bothered by any of that nonsense if that's the way it appears to be. The hand of God will be extended no longer. It's sort of similar to the sixth chapter of Genesis. As God looked out over what he had created and he saw that man was just evil just wicked continually. And I look around sometime and I think the world is in bad shape. But really, by comparison, I don't think we've gotten as bad as it was in the days of the flood. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thought of his heart was evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. And the Lord said, I will blot out man who I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and birds of the sky, for I am sorry I made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Friend, when you end up in hell, the hand of God will no longer be extended to you to invite you to enjoy eternity with him. It's way beyond that. Just as there came a point in time when God saw that the wickedness upon the face of the earth was so great that his time for mercy was just about run out. And Noah spent all the rest of that time as he built the ark trying to encourage people, trying to plead with people. He preached to them. He was a preacher. But only his sons and their wives and his own wife paid any attention to the sermons and bothered to decide to get their life right with God. And once those floodwaters began to rise, those people didn't have to hear Noah preach anymore. I don't have any idea how Noah went about preaching, but the scriptures tell us that he did. I don't know what they thought about as he was preaching. I can imagine, perhaps, that they made fun of him, talking about a flood. Who ever heard of a flood? What do you mean it's going to rain and the floodwaters are going to rise? Noah, you've lost your mind. And what are you doing over there building that? What is that thing? Who ever heard of that? Where'd you get the blueprint for that? And no doubt, they may have ridiculed him, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, if they did, when those waters began to rise and they saw that Noah and his family was safe inside that ark, they'd give anything to be able to hear another sermon and to hear another invitation being given. And I'm not saying Noah offered an invitation like we did, but they'd give anything to get another chance to take Noah up on what he was preaching. But friend, there wasn't any more chance, and they all drowned, every last one of them. And when you end up in hell because you grew tired of hearing the invitation that the preacher extended, and you grew tired of hearing your family members talk to you about becoming a faithful servant of God, don't worry about it when you're in hell. You won't hear that anymore. They're separated from you. I don't know how God is going to somehow deal with that for those who are faithful, the knowledge that their loved ones are lost eternally. I don't know how he's going to make that possible so that they can enjoy heaven and not be sorrowing over their loved ones and friends who are in hell. I don't know how he's going to do that, but he'll do it. But those people who are in hell, throughout eternity, will be conscious of the fact, especially those that heard the gospel, that they had a chance to obey it. Invitation after invitation was extended, and they, in effect, said no. And you know, that can come at any age. Death is no respecter of persons. It doesn't go through and just come to those who are way up in years. It comes to those that are young. So don't make the mistake that, well, I'm going to obey the gospel someday. There's a coming an invitation song that I'm going to answer, but not this one. I've got a few more things I want to do. Don't wait. Now, this may seem good news to some people. These are the benefits, and there may be some more to hell. But there, of course, is a catch to this. If you decide you want these benefits, to be free from all these meddling preachers and free from those who will try to tell you about your lifestyle, free from those who are going to try to invite you to do what is right, there's a catch to it, though. When you cross over into eternity, there's no turning back. It's too late. And as Mark 9, three different times in that text, Jesus, in describing how that under certain circumstances, you know, it'd be better if your hand offend you, cut it off. In Mark, the 9th chapter, he says three times, verses 44, 46, and 48, that hell is a place where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. I have trouble trying to comprehend that. Most fires I've ever known anything about have a beginning point and an ending point. Once in a while, you'll see the eternal flame that's lit sometime, and they keep it going all the time. It never goes out, theoretically. But this is a place where the fire never goes out. Tormented forever and ever. So if you have the slightest doubt that you really want the things I've talked about tonight, then you need to change your mind today. Don't wait till tomorrow. The devil will tell you, wait till tomorrow. Give this some more thought. If you know that you, this very hour, will be lost in a devil's hell forever, then don't wait. You need to take advantage of this opportunity that's about to be extended to you. Once you make your decision, there's no turning back. It's not like something that you buy and you're guaranteed that within the first 72 hours or something, you can cancel the contract and you don't have to go ahead with it. Once you decide, I don't want what God has to offer, and you die in that condition, you're without hope. No turning back. What will your answer be tonight? Do you want the pleasures of heaven, the benefits of being with God, and all the faithful down through time? Yes, to be reunited even with loved ones that have gone before. I have a hope in that. I believe that David knew what he was talking about with regard to his son back there when he said, he cannot come to me, but I can go to him. I believe the Bible teaches us that there's recognition after this life is over. It's true that some things have changed. Jesus said in the resurrection, they'll be neither married or given in marriage. I understand all that. But I think there's definitely enough evidence there to believe that those faithful saints of old, whether they are friends, relatives, or the apostles, or whoever, will be there and I can be with them. Friend, don't you want to do that? Isn't that better than going to hell? If you need to respond to this invitation tonight, we hope you will, as we stand and sing together.